Hello and welcome to the second Exiled Eagles podcast. We'll be discussing the recent games against Everton and Spurs, Milay Jednak becoming Prime Minister of Australia, Wilf not being at the World Cup, and we'll be chatting to Rob from the Hong Kong Eagles to see what life is like supporting Crystal Palace over there. Hello and welcome to the Exiled Eagles podcast, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. We're back again with the panel. I've got Dale Quarterly.
Hello.
Up in Central Coast, Rob Seltzer.
Evening.
And in Brisbane, Mark Werner.
G'day folks, how are we?
So yeah, this is the second podcast for Exiled Eagles. Pod one went sort of way better than any of us expected, I think it's fair to say. So thanks to everyone that sort of listened, left a message, commented on how Australian I sound now. It was all very much appreciated. Yeah, so what's been happening in the last couple of weeks since we last recorded? There's an international break, of which we will be talking more about later. In between that, there were two games. We've had Spurs at Wembley and Everton at home just this weekend. So, guys, I want to start with a question for you. I posted this on Twitter. I'll change the language. What's more frustrating? Knowing you're rubbish, sitting through 90 minutes of rubbish and getting a rubbish result, or being good, playing well, and still getting a rubbish result? Rob, what do you reckon?
Oh, what a question. I mean, to start off with that, we've had a full day at work, my brain's mush. I'd say playing rubbish because you don't know when you're going to get out of it. But, you know, because we're playing well, I know we haven't got what we deserve yet, but it's got to happen, surely. That you can't keep playing as well as we are, and we're playing as well against good teams, decent teams, and still not get the results. We've had the mistake, as we'll talk about, the mistakes were the reason for this weekend, and once they're ironed out, once they're done, then someone will take a pounding off us at some point. If we keep playing like this, someone will rip teams apart.
I bloody well hope so. I just find it so frustrating that, you know, especially being over here, we stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and you sit through that great performance and come out with nothing. It's a real heartbreaker.
And then you've got to go to bed and you're like, oh my God, I'm so frustrated. I've got to sleep. And then, oh, bollocks.
Yeah. Dale, what do you reckon?
Let's be fair. The Tottenham game kicked off at 11:30 p.m. I don't know. I think I'm quite happy to see us playing so much better. It's frustrating that we're not getting the results, but I'll take it because at least it's worthwhile watching, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
The first couple of games the season, oh, Lord have mercy.
It's true, but at least then you knew within about 20 minutes it was just going to be no good.
Yeah,
Make your peace with it. So the Spurs game, good performance as per usual. Goalie against us has an absolute worldie, like they did the week before. What can you do about that,
mate? As you guys know, I'm a goalkeeper, and I can guarantee there are not many teams who go, "Whoa, that Dale had a worldie against us."
I'd also guarantee that.
I just don't know how it keeps happening. You know, I was sat in a casino in Vanuatu when we played Burnley and Tom Heaton went off and I thought, brilliant, here we go, who's Nick Pope? And he was amazing. He has subsequently put in, I think, two man of the match performances after that. And then I turn the TV on and see Paolo Gazzaniga in goal against us. And I'm thinking,
the well-known. Well,
here we go. You know, this is ours. No Dele Alli. Gazzaniga's in goal. We've got this. And he does that. I couldn't believe it. But he should have been sent off. He punched Sacco in the head.
I mean, we are definitely going to talk about refereeing decisions a lot more later on in the pod. But yeah, that's a very good point. But Mark, I mean, is it good to see at least Hodgson looks like he's got a plan and it's all sort of starting to come together now?
Yeah, I think despite, I mean, the win and a couple of draws, the results are going in the right directions very slowly, but at least they look like they're going to bat for him, put it that way. It doesn't look like there's that much disharmony between the gaffer and the players. But still, you're like, you know, you, to double back on your question, we're playing this good footy, but still little to nothing for it, and you just think, you know, when's it going to come? Like, you know,
totally.
it's pretty hard to take.
Yeah, because you wonder, like, eventually will the players' heads drop? You know, because how much more can they do?
Well, that's going to happen invariably as well. Yeah, you keep pushing and getting nothing, and then you're just getting kicked in the bollocks every week. And but yeah, I mean, I'd still rather be looking the goods than just an absolute rabble and nothing really to look forward to in the following week.
Yeah, you're quite right. And I suppose, you know, before the game, 1-0 against Spurs at Wembley, it's not a terrible result. You probably would have sort of taken that. But yeah, still frustrating. And then obviously Everton just gone. What do we think of that, Rob?
It's definitely 2 points dropped. And obviously we all saw it happen. We all know what happened, but this is the thing that really irks me. Like, and I know referees, they're people. It's a hard, and I'm not saying it's not an easy job, because it's not. And a lot of the decisions are 50-50, or they've done it split second. But you look at where Anthony Taylor was, he's looking square at it. He can't. He's apparently one of the 10 best officials in England. He gets international games. He gets Champions League games. You know, he's trusted with games where there's a lot on the line. He shouldn't get that wrong, pure and simple. But the problem is, in general, is players have to go down to win penalties. They have to. If a player doesn't fall over, a referee won't give a penalty. So, for example, like, how many times have you seen, like, for example, Will flying through and he's going at full tilt and someone just gives him a nudge. It just puts him just slightly off balance. He doesn't go down, though. Ball runs out of play, goal kick. If that's in the centre circle, that's a free kick every time for the nudge. But unless a player goes down, a referee won't give a penalty. And it's just like, until referees start giving penalties for that, like they clamped down on that shirt pulling for a little, for like the 2 week period when we played Watford, so they decided to give Watford a penalty for it. You're like, until referees start thinking, actually, that was a foul, that impeded the progress. Okay, he didn't fall over, didn't go down, but because he was nudged or someone slid in front of him or bumped him or took him out, whatever, but he didn't, then people will continue to dive.
Yeah, and at the other end, we seem to have
nothing.
One absolute sitter that we miss each week as well, which is so frustrating.
And so, like, when Mark pointed out, you point out that, you know, the players get disheartened, I got the impression that Hodgson was like, what more can I do at the end of that, at the interview after the game? He's turned the team around, they're playing well, and he's like, well, I do that, I'm playing so well, and then, you know, Scott Dan, instead of lumping it into Rosette, tries to take on six players and turns into one of them. You're like,
That's a Cruyff turn, So Dale, we'll come to you for that. Sproni mistake or Scott Dan mistake or 50-50? Remember, this podcast is only going to be about half an hour long, so...
Yeah. Goalkeeper sees everything in front of him, all right? So, Sproni, dummies, Nias, everyone's given it. And he sees everything in front of him then. And he chooses to give that ball to Scott Dan, because that's how Palace have been playing, right? We've been trying to play it out the back.
Boot it, yeah.
But he's got to give that long. He's got to go long. And when he gives it to Scott Dan and he sees there's pressure, he's then got to say to Scott Dan, that's got to go.
Jules got praised for the calm head he showed against West Ham. Like, we're 6 minutes into injury time. He collects a cross from Antonio. Instead of just lumping it up front, he's like, right, let's roll it to Fosu-Mensah to start the ball rolling. This is the complete flip reverse of that. So where he got praised for his calm head there, he should think, right, it's gone up. We've got 2 minutes before half time. They're crap. They've shown nothing. Let's just hump it upfield, have our two banks of four. They're not going to bother. They wouldn't even try to have broken us down. I guarantee you that.
No.
They've knocked the ball around a couple of times and been happy to go in at 2-1. So he has to shoulder that, I think.
I think as well, the interesting thing is you've got to look the Palace faithful again. We love Sproni, so it's Sproni. Hennessy did the exact same thing for Wales recently in a World Cup game qualifier. Rolled it out to Ashley Williams, and Ashley Williams seemed to be absolved of blame, and it was all Hennessy's fault because he shouldn't have passed it to Ashley Williams. If we go on that basis, this is Jules' fault. So either way, sometimes the ball's just got to go.
Yeah, I mean, in Jules' defence, he made a couple of saves that game.
He did.
The Everton
game, for sure.
Tennessee isn't making. You know, he got down really well at the start of the second half. So, you know, and that's what you get with Jules.
Yes,
which you
totally
don't get with Hennessy.
Totally.
And going back to the penalty, I know there's sort of a lot of talk of using VAR and whether we would have got the penalty turned over if we'd used VAR. Mark, I want to sort of come to you as an A-League fan, because we're using VAR in the A-League at the moment. Having watched what sort of VAR's brought to the game in the A-League, I don't know if it's really the answer to the problems. It seems to create more problems than solutions. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a big talking point, certainly, since it's been brought in, and unfortunately for the wrong reasons. Holding up, breaking momentum of the game, slowing things down. They've had a couple of decisions, but they've taken nearly 5 minutes to make a call on something.
So we went to Sydney Perth, didn't we? And it was almost 5 minutes to decide on a penalty and
52 or something like that. The week before, there was a goal disallowed by Brisbane that they went back about three or four plays. Seemed to be a long time to double back on something to get something right. And whilst I think in theory it's a good idea, and obviously you're trying to bring it about to get a correct result and skip through the howlers, but if you're doing it in such an inefficient manner, then it just gets bad press, and that's what it's getting at the moment.
It is at the moment, and it's so weird. The screen that the referee uses, have you seen the screen the referee uses for VAR?
It's
about the size of a phone, and they've got two massive jumbotrons either end of the stadium, and they're trying to make a decision on this tiny little screen. So, that's something they need to sort out. So hopefully they can sort out VAR problems in the A-League before they bring it into the Premier League, otherwise people are going to lose it.
If you look at it, all you need to look at, like, how rugby does it, and how every single American sport does it, all you need to have is, like, a van outside. For example, this is how rugby does it. There's a van outside with a video referee there. And so, Saturday, for example, video referee's watching the game, referee gives a penalty, the game stops. He can then see instant replays within seconds and just be straight in the guy's ear, not play on, no penalty, booking. Done. And that's 10 seconds max. If they think it's going to, for example, it's a contentious one, it's like, I don't know. And then you revert back and say, referee's call. That's what they do in rugby.
Yeah, umpire's call.
Yeah, umpire's call. In cricket, it's like, well, there's nothing to overturn it. There's no, we can't see either way for sure. So it's your call, mate, and then just play on. But you can have someone sitting there and it's done in 15 seconds.
Yeah, no time at all. I think, that is the way you need to go. Because there's definitely the problem with the Brisbane game was, it was about five or six passes they found someone was offside. Five or six passes before the goal. And they're like, okay, well, here, that guy was offside, so we won't count it. It's like, where do you stop? Where do you start?
Yeah.
Crazy. And Dale, let's talk about Nias.
Mm-hmm.
Should he have stayed on the pitch?
No, should not have been.
No.
But I'm going to confess, first of all, I was pretty drunk at the time of the game. So memory's a little bit hazy.
That's got to be a caveat for all the games on this podcast.
Yes.
Someone has to be drunk. One of us. It's four of us. Dale, you've won this week.
Well done.
I was on this week. And I was in the pub with the England rugby game on the big screen and the Palace game on my phone. But I reckon I counted three times Nias should have been booked.
For sure.
In the first half, at least. And he got booked once. And he just shouldn't have been on the pitch. I'm sorry, he should not have been on the pitch, full stop. And if he was on the pitch, he should have been in the bloody Palace shirt.
I mean, how annoying is that sort of that situation looking now? I mean, Christ almighty, he looks decent. He's exactly what we've been missing for the last couple of months. I don't think we'd be in this problem now if we had him.
But Ronald Koeman did not want him. The fans did not want him. No one wanted this guy. I'm looking at someone there and thinking, when he was on loan at Hull last year, I thought, this guy's decent. This guy can play. You know, so interesting. It's a real shame we didn't get him, because on what we saw on Saturday, that's the sort of player, a good change up to Benteke.
Oh, could you imagine bringing him off the bench? It'd cause you nightmares, wouldn't it?
Terrify people.
Yeah, totally. And just one last sort of point on Everton. Now, there was talk of Big Sam going there. He didn't, but had Big Sam gone to Everton, is that a bad look for Steve Parrish?
Yeah.
I think, Mark is now in the head there. I think so, because I know the reasons he left, and it was all raw at the time, and all that type of stuff. But and I don't know the ins and outs. There's a lot of people a lot closer to the club than I am. This is just Seltzer surmising from knowing absolutely bugger all. But there's got to be something there. There has to be something there. To go through as many managers as we do, and like, okay, we got rid sacking some because they're crap. Fine. But Pulis, we all wanted to stay, and he walked away 2 days before the season. Allardyce, we all wanted to stay. He walked away just after the end of the season. Whether we knew he was going to go or not before that, we don't know. But we can't go through so many managers. And then we went through this rigorous, rigorous thing in the summer and came up, and we came up with De Boer that everyone hated. So I don't know. I think if Allardyce and Parrish spoke to Allardyce, didn't he? He said, and Allardyce said, no, I'm not ready. Then what, a month and a half later, he's ready now?
It's not just that he wasn't ready, it's the fact that he resigned to retire to spend time with his wife and kids. Now, I don't know if his wife and kids are absolute arseholes, but 3.5 months later, you're ready to take a job. What does that say about your wife and kids?
To be fair, in Sam's defence, just quickly, he wouldn't be the first bloke to think, all right, all my working days are done, I'm going to run down the clock with a lovely family life, and it's gone tits up 2 months later.
Very Australian attitude.
All right, cool. Well, let's leave part one there. We'll come back. Part two, we'll be talking about what happened during the international break, particularly the Socceroos and Milo Jednak. Hello and welcome back to part two of Exiled Eagles podcast, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. A couple of weeks ago was the international break. Myself and Mark went down and watched the Socceroos in their do-or-die playoff against Honduras. So, Mark, do you just want to give us a sort of brief overview of the Socceroos campaign up to that point?
Long.
Yeah, very long.
Very long, mate. Longest in history, actually, for a team to qualify for the World Cup. I think 29 months, 884 days or something like that, 11 countries, 22 games. So whilst I was happy for us to win and go through, I was also happy to see the back of it, mate, and get on with things. But no, it was probably a situation we shouldn't have been in, to be honest. We're current Asian champions, so the fact we had to go through a third-place playoff with Syria, which was the other group in Asia, and then play off the fourth-ranked CONCACAF team, which was Honduras, was a situation we should never have been in. And we got into it and we fought our way out of it and we got chocolates. But yeah, it's a bit double-edged. A lot of people would be of the opinion that it was a situation we shouldn't have been in, but we've qualified, so you just celebrate, lament. I'm going with celebrating. But there's arguments for both. But yeah, happy to see us win. Obviously, mate, it was a great night.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was 0-0 over in Honduras. Really impressive away performance, I thought. Just shut up shop, basically didn't give them much to go on. And then came over here, and as everyone probably knows by now, Milo Jednak popped up and scored a hat-trick, which is a sentence I never thought I'd ever say. It was great to see. I mean, the guy's still got it, isn't he?
Yeah, well, it was very impressive considering the amount of football he'd played since, I think, April. He'd only had something like 70 or 90 minutes of club football under his belt, and then to have that travel, question marks over whether he could back up and go the distance again, which I thought he did with aplomb. And, you know, it was Jedi of old, sort of, looking after the boys at the back and leading from the front and... Mate, I don't know. You know, the team gets an extra leg when he's out there, and you could certainly notice that in the latter stages of our qualifying process. Once he was back and bagging a hat trick, so
yeah, amazing. And I just still love that guy. It's weird for me to love an ex player as much as I still love seeing Milo out on the pitch. You guys feel the same, Rob and Dale? Still got time for that guy?
No, I always have time for him. You're always going to have time for Milo. I mean, he heart and soul, isn't he? But like one thing for me, I'm not really following the Socceroos, and I haven't really followed international football for 10-15 years. What was nice is that because football comes a distant 64th in the list of sports liked out here, behind polo, I believe. When they qualify, when they do well, and the press get on them, like, the press don't get on like the English press do, like, 55 reasons why England will never win the World Cup, and England football star in booze, shame, well, that's, like, all the crap we've seen on the headlines. But here, it's just like, right, we've got a qualifier against Honduras, and the whole country gets behind them. They're like, this is the best thing ever. They qualify. The news the next day, it's plastered over the newspapers. We're brilliant. How fun is this? They're not going expecting to win the World Cup. They're going to be part of the World Cup, and that's what it's about. It's nice to see an international team being supported like they are and not crucified by the press week in, week out.
I'd go with that. I definitely would go with that. The one thing about being in Australia is that they get behind their own, which is brilliant to see. My only issue with the Socceroos is that they're bloody good. They've got some really good individual players. So, if we look at Matt Ryan, Premier League, Tommy Rogic, Matt Urich, Mili Jeznak, they've got players playing in the Premier League. Aaron Moy, Matt Leckie, players in the Premier League, players in the Dutch League, players in playing up in Celtic and Scotland. They should not have been in that situation they put themselves in to have to go against Honduras. I really believe They should have got through automatically. So, but look, they got there. It's good for us because it means there's going to be extra levels of excitement in this country for the World Cup. So, bring it on! I can't wait.
Just quickly, you boys being over here, Rob, you've been in 10 odd years. Is that right?
7 years for me.
Yeah, 9 years for me.
So, where obviously support the Three Lions back home? Does it sort of resonate with you much? What the Socceroos are doing? Care factor? Not bothered?
As I said, I'd fallen out of love with international football in general. Not the reason because it's the boring that people complain about. Just because of the expectation levels one, and just no one can do anything right. But here, it's just nice to see a country get right behind. I mean, the problem they've got, like, you know, because they're obviously next door to New Zealand. Whenever they play the rugby union, then, you know, they're expected to beat New Zealand, but New Zealand are way ahead, and they get on them, the Wallabies, a little bit. But see, my main problem with all Australian teams is they have to have a bloody name. You got the Wallabies, the Socceroos, the Ollie Roos, the Hockey Roos, the Kangaroos. You know, just call them the footy team. Let's call them the rugby team. Gee, what's wrong with that?
We're running out of marsupials over here.
Yeah. Okay, and Dale, you watched both England performances, right? So Ruben Loftus-Cheek was pretty decent.
Yeah, look, I think Southgate made a bold call picking him by putting him in the squad and starting him. It's obviously at the moment Gareth is thinking about who he's worked with at under 21s, who he can bring in the side. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, 6'3", and silky a player, as you'll see, against Germany. I mean, his first international involvement was a double nutmeg of two players in the world champions. I mean, he actually oozed a bit of class, and it was really good for me as a Palace fan, considering against Tottenham, he probably looked a little bit lost playing out on the right wing. So to have him back in the middle and seeing what he could do was great. You know, always wanted the ball. He's a Rolls-Royce player. He's definitely a luxury player. He will only sprint when he's got the ball to go past someone. I can't see him sprinting into position. But when he's got that ball, my God, he doesn't lose it and he finds the easy pass. And that is what England needs, someone who can pass forward. And it's what Palace need as well. So that's great against Germany. I honestly think if he continues to have a good season for us, centre midfield, I think Southgate should take him. And why not? When we're playing against some of these lower-ranked nations who don't want to attack us, a Loftus-Cheek is the player you're going to need. Harry Winks, those type of players who get the ball going forward.
Wilfried Zaha, whoops.
Well, we'll come on to that. Yeah, we'll exactly. Come on to that. They're the players you're going to need. So, yeah, look, really good to see it. Good to see a Palace player. What's sort of the first Palace player to play since Wilf, probably, in the friendly?
Did Andros right? not play?
Did he play?
I don't know, does he play since he's joined us?
He's in a squad.
He's in a squad. Not sure if he played. Right. Not sure if he played.
But safe to say that Ruben Loftus-Cheek probably too good to be a Palace player next season. Certainly too good for the Championship.
The performance against Germany would have alerted a few people to how good this kid could be. You know, compared to someone like a Tammy Abrahams, who looked really raw, and probably that chance came a bit too early for him, Ruben looked like he slotted in. So I reckon if we stay up, you just got to hope we've got a little clause in that contract.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, England, Australia, both at the World Cup, something to look forward to. Wilfried Zaha not at the World Cup. That's a big disappointment, isn't it?
Nope.
No? You don't reckon?
I'm half Ghanaian, mate. I don't care what Ivory Coast do.
Fair enough. I mean, it makes you wonder, should he have hung about for England or did he make the right call in the end?
I personally think he made the right call. Yeah. I mean, you can hang. I'm still hanging around for England. I'm 32 years old and I'm all for football. So,
and you live in Australia.
Going to come that. Is that what I can qualify for Australia now? Hold on. There we go. I could be at the World Cup. Hold you. Keep watching. But, you know, the call might never come. The England football team is pretty much picked by the press half the time. Whoever the press's darling is, they get in. I'm still convinced that the reason Jamie Vardy actually made the England squad when he did was because they literally could not pick him. He scored 20 goals, less than one a league. The press were like, Jamie Vardy has to play, Jamie Vardy has to play. If they weren't on the Jamie Vardy bandwagon, I guarantee he wouldn't have been in there because he wasn't Daniel Sturridge. I mean, what's Daniel Sturridge done in the past 3 years? Is Danny Welbeck always makes the squad? Why are they always make why do these players make the squad?
Do we not think at the time when Wilf, if it was now, Wilf would get in the squad easily. We know it. The way he's playing now, he'll be in the squad. I have this issue that I think 18 months ago, most of last season, towards middle part of last season, Wilf got better. But there was a time with Wilf, not so long ago, where the crosses weren't great, his finishing wasn't great, and England probably thought, the coaches at the time probably thought, no, we'll go with a safe option, which may not be right. We've now seen two England managers at Palace who have hung their hat on him.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that had he hung out, I have no doubt whatsoever he would now be in that squad.
Yeah.
And be the main man in that squad as well.
Yep, I agree. But at the same point, at the same time, I can see why he's like, well, why am I hanging about for this? I don't need to bend over backwards for you guys.
Like, you've got people like Jesse Lingard that plays 15 minutes of Premier League football, walks into the squad. You're like, Jack Wilshere is injured for a season, walks into the squad. I mean, he's there, he's playing Premier League football, but I mean, okay, he might not have been playing as well as he is now with the same end product he was now, but he was playing Premier League football. These players weren't even playing Premier League football. So, and they all had the friendlies. I mean, they were picking the same squad for the friendlies. Like what Gareth Southgate's done now is he's picked a different squad. And as you said there, Tammy Abraham's raw. But they've looked thinking, can this guy do it? So Wilf was raw. Why not throw him in one of those friendlies? Like, can this guy do it? They didn't bother.
Yeah. Well, they did. And I also just want to think, one thing that held Wilf back, I honestly believe, was when he was on under-21s duty in a match and him and Ravel Morrison started having a set to after scoring a goal or a free kick or who was going to take a free kick or something. And I honestly think that held Wilf back for a little while because people were like, well, this kid, like, look at his attitude. I mean, Ravel Morrison, we know he didn't kick on.
Yeah, I was going to say, everyone had a set to with Ravel Morrison, didn't they, at some point?
Yeah, they did. I just wonder if that played into the mind of some people at the FA.
Oh, for sure. 100%, I reckon. Yeah, no doubt. Are we looking forward to the World Cup anyway?
Yep. Once every 4 years, and there'll be still a fair representation of our respective countries for a start, and Palace players dotted about their respective nations. I like it. It's something, obviously, I've really only gotten on board with the last, since 06 to now, the last four campaigns.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped for it.
Cool. All right, well, let's finish this part here. We're going to be back in part three. We've got an interview with Rob Saunders from Hong Kong Eagles. He gives a little lowdown about supporting Palace over there, and then we wrap things up. Okay, and welcome back to Exiled Eagles podcast. I'm here with Rob Saunders from Hong Kong Eagles. How you doing, mate?
Hi, Tony. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. So you watched the Everton game last night. What did you think?
Yeah, we're all really disappointed because we got one bad decision, one soft goal, but for large chunks of the game, we were bossing it. I thought Kabaya played well, Luka played well, and we had all our good players taking us forwards. Just silly mistakes are costing us.
I know, it's just the story of the season so far, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I could count probably about 6 or 7 goals that we've gifted this year, and it's really hitting us in the points. We shouldn't be in the bottom three now.
I know, it's so frustrating. So we're playing pretty well, like as good as sort of we've played for quite a while, I reckon. But yeah, just cannot get over the line. It's driving me crazy.
We got a consistency of performance now. If you look at the Spurs game, the Chelsea game, you know, we're really going forward, and I can't see us staying in the bottom three for much longer if we stay like playing like this.
Yeah, hopefully, mate. Hopefully. Okay, cool. Well, so let's chat about, well, you first. Sort of how come you ended up in Hong Kong? What's the story there?
So I've been in Hong Kong for around 3.5 years now. I came here for a couple of business trips, and then I ended up meeting my future wife, although I didn't know it at the time. And we had a sort of all around the world relationship, going here, there and everywhere. So in the end, one of us had to move, and it was just much better for me to do that because the company I was with. So one of the first instructions she gave me when I got over here was to go and find some people to watch Palace with. So I did that. I went on CPFC.org. There was a thread for Palace in Hong Kong. Met a couple of the guys who are here already, and we've just gone on from there.
Yeah, and so moving away from England, sort of how did you feel about moving away from Palace? Because I know it was actually a thing that I really sort of had to weigh up because it was, you know, such a daily part of my routine. Sort of having to sort of go get away from Selhurst Park was quite sort of a big thing, a thing I had to sort of get my head around. How about you?
Yeah, it was a massive decision. I mean, Palace was part of the reason I moved from Scotland down to London before I came over here so I could see some games. I knew I was going to come over. And the last game I saw in the UK was Palace 3, Liverpool 3. So
oh, wow.
I went out on a real high.
Yeah, didn't you just? Okay, and so tell us about the, is it Hong Kong Eagles? That's how you refer to yourself, yeah?
Yeah, Hong Kong Eagles. So we got a mixed group. It's mainly expats, but we've got a couple of locals. We've got an Indonesian lad and 3 or 4 locals. And really, since I came out here, we've been gathering up the loss. So there are a few guys meeting informally here or there, but I guess I can credit myself with putting a bit of impetus behind it and get some regularity in. So we already had a Facebook page, but it wasn't really used. I created a WhatsApp group because the first night I went out to meet one of the guys, Chris Owen, we bumped into a couple of other guys in Palace shirts walking around Wan Chai, which is where we go drinking. So we exchanged numbers, and then we had a group of 4. And then they said, oh, add so-and-so in. Before we knew it, we were up to 10 or 12. And then the group's grown organically of sort of gathering people who were always Palace fans, but probably dormant and not watching the games together.
That's great. And yeah, I mean, it's really great being overseas and having that sort of Palace community, you know, because when you go to a new country, you don't know anyone. And then you've immediately got something in common with these people. And I don't know about you guys, but yeah, we're all sort of really good mates now over here in Australia.
Yeah, I'd say out of the group, I've got 5 or 6 really good mates. I mean, there are some guys that are they're good guys, but probably Palace has thrown us together. But There are 5 or 6 really good guys in the group, and I would have been mates with them if I was back at home outside of Palace. You know that for a start.
Yeah, for sure. And so what's your sort of daily match routine? What time does it kick off over there? Sort of how do you meet up, etc.?
So the early game normally is around 7:30 or 8:30. So that's the lunchtime game of Premier League. So depends on when Palace is. But typically the 3 p.m. game is 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. So there's a bit of poker playing on what time, if we're going to go for the early game, and normally it'll get messy if we do that, if Palace isn't the early game. So then there's talk of food, so we'll go to the local Hong Kong style noodle shop, have some exotic Hong Kong style food, and then we'll back into the pub probably about 9 p.m. and take it from there, get a few jugs of beer on the table, and if we're feeling very confident, we'll have a pre-match Sambuca, because Sambuca's the celebrating drink.
And because not many Sambucas this season, then.
Yeah. Well, we were going the route of having a pre-match Sambuca to try and change our luck in the end.
Right. Anything will do.
Yeah. And it did actually work, because we did it for Chelsea, and of course we had no chance of winning that, and we go and win.
Right, okay. Well, please do it for Brighton in a couple of weeks, will you?
Yeah, certainly will.
And yeah, sort of tell us about the Asian Cup
the pre-season tour. What sort of happened there? I know the club got in touch with you. Sort of talk us through it.
Yeah, it was good. So previously the club's reached out to me, and I've written a couple of articles for the programmers, Hong Kong Eagles, just to tell them about the supporters group. And when they announced the Asia Trophy in Hong Kong, we were very excited. And then the club got in touch with me and said, oh, we'd like to do a fan night. And there wasn't a lot of discussion about what it involved. So I just acted as a go-between between the club and the pub where we drink. And in the end, Steve Parrish came down with Zahar, Speroni, Fancy High, Mark Bright, James Tompkins. And, you know, it was great to see the players up close and personal. And they were great. And of course, we had the two games here as well. So we got tickets for the Hong Kong Stadium. It was mainly Liverpool fans there, but we turned a little corner of the stadium very noisy, and we attracted a lot of attention from the local Liverpool fans, who were impressed with the support that the Palace fans were giving. Non-stop singing. There was a group over from London. We had a couple of guys over from Australia, actually. A guy from Brisbane came over.
Yeah, Mark, he's one of our co-hosts.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had a few expats over from different locations, a couple of international fans as well. So we had about 100, 150 Palace fans all told in one corner of the stadium, and we made ourselves heard. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And, because I suppose it's primarily Liverpool and Manchester United fans over there, is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. And I'll give them no end of stick for their bad choice, all the locals.
Good, absolutely. So what else happened on the tour? Was there was the meet-up, the couple of games, was that it?
No, there were the Palace fans that came over from London, I think, were over most nights. So there was a few socials. So we went to the players' hotel on the Monday, the day they landed. And got a few photos with Frank de Boer.
Who?
We'll mark that in the archives now. And a few of the other players, they were wandering around because the weather was horrendous and they were struggling where to train. And it looked like the game was going to be put off on the Wednesday. But they made a lot of time for us, and I had a good chat to Mark Bright, which was a great one for me because I am of that era when Brighty was in his pomp. So, but he couldn't have been nicer, to be honest. You sometimes think there are maybe these players can be a bit aloof, but Brighty was really great with all of the supporters, especially on the fan night as well.
Ah, awesome. That's great. That's great. Cool. Well, I think that's about it, really. I mean, I suppose if you've got any plans to go home anytime soon, just a backstory, me and you, we met up, didn't we, in Hong Kong Airport on our way to the cup final. Had a few beers, which was good. Sort of Palace fans from all over the world were sort of coming through Hong Kong at that time, so that was a good crack. So yeah, do you get back to Sellers Park at all?
Yeah, I've still got my season ticket, I'll normally go back twice a year, and I'm going back at Christmas this year. So I normally tailor my visit around a couple of Palace fixtures to get a couple of home games in. Last year I went to Southampton away. I missed the Arsenal game because Sky moved it on to a Monday night. I was a bit disappointed. I saw the Leicester game and West Ham and Liverpool last year.
Excellent. Good man. All right. Well, Rob, thanks very much for joining us. We'll definitely have you on the show again, if that's all right.
Yeah, pleasure, Tony. Great to speak to you again. Hopefully see you soon.
So that was Rob Saunders from Hong Kong Eagles. Thank you very much to him for joining us. If anyone's going Hong Kong way, I suggest you give those guys a shout. Good bunch of lads. And it's good to see the games over there with them. So just finally, a little bit of admin. We've got a game against the Man United fans in Sydney. That's coming up on Saturday, December the 2nd at 11 o'clock at Fraser Park. It's $20 to play, and all proceeds go to Mr. Perfect, the mental health charity. So if you're interested in that, come and find us. Search for CPFC Sydney supporters on Facebook, and you should get information there. And we've also got CPFC Sydney Christmas drinks, Saturday the 16th of December, which coincides with the Leicester game. And Dale, you've set us up a Exiled Eagles Facebook page.
Yeah, so anyone who wants to see what we look like or get in touch or anything at all, www.facebook.com/exiledeagles. I said there's going to be some profiles about who we are. We'll get some pictures and some videos on there. And I suppose there's obviously a chance for you guys to leave us a question or something you want us to talk about.
Excellent. And Mark, if anyone's going to Brisbane for the Ashes, where can they find you guys?
Yes, mate, we'll be watching the game. Stoke will be at the Pig and Whistle at Riverside. All the games will be on simultaneously there, so it'll be a good day out for any travelling supporters.
Yeah, pleasure, Tony. Great to speak to you again.
For Australian supporters as well, if they're about. Fancy night out. In the early game, which is 5:30 in the morning up here, we'll be pig and whistle in the Queen Street Mall with not as much booze flowing.
Okay. All right, good man. And yeah, if anyone is coming out for the Ashes, I'll put some posts on Homestyle message boards about where you can find us as well. And you can also check us out on Instagram and Twitter, CPFC_SYD. So thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us.